Matthew's Gospel, chapter 20, and beginning at verse 17.
Now Jesus was going up to Jerusalem. On the way, he took the 12 aside and said to them, "We are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles to be mocked and flogged and crucified. On the third day, he will be raised to life." Then the mother of Zebedee's sons came to Jesus with her sons and, kneeling down, asked a favor of him. "What is it you want?" he asked. She said, "Grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right and the other at your left in your kingdom." "You don't know what you are asking," Jesus said to them. "Can you drink the cup I am going to drink?" "We can," they answered. Jesus said to them, "You will indeed drink from my cup, but to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared by my Father." When the 10 heard about this, they were indignant with the two brothers. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many."
Kerry, thank you very much for reading to us. There's an old saying, perhaps you know it, perhaps you've heard it, behind every great man stands a great woman. And perhaps very often that great woman was his mum. One morning, a mother went into her son's room. "Wake up, son, wake up, it's time to go to school." "Oh, why, mum? I don't want to go." "Give me two good reasons why you shouldn't go." "Well, for one thing, all the kids hate me. For another thing, all the teachers hate me." "Well, stop making excuses. Come on, it's time to go. Get up and get ready." "Well, give me two reasons why I should go to school." "Okay," she said. "Well, for one, you're 52 years old. And for another, you're the headmaster, so you ought to be there." Well, I wonder how many leaders in this world owe that to their mums, to their mothers. I wonder how many of the great names of history had mothers who drove them along and encouraged them to get to where they got to. We could try and imagine what their mums might have said to them. So we could think of Christopher Columbus and his mother saying, "I don't care what you've discovered, you could at least have written from time to time." Or Albert Einstein's mum, "But Albert, it's your graduation photo. Please can't you do something about your hair?" Or Thomas Edison's mum, "Of course I'm proud that you invented the light bulb, but now it's time to turn it off and get to bed." Well, one mum came to Jesus with her sons because she wanted them to be the best they could be. She wanted them to be great. She wanted them to be number one. I'm just going to read you again a couple of sentences from that reading. "Then the mother of Zebedee's sons came to Jesus with her sons and, kneeling down, asked a favor of him. 'What is it that you want?' he asked. She said, 'Grant that one of these two sons of mine may sit at your right and the other at your left in your kingdom.'" Do you see what she's saying? She's saying, "Jesus, you say that you are a great Christ, a king, that you're going to rule, that you're going to be put in charge, that God is going to make you the most important person in the whole world. And people will serve you and obey you. Well, if that is right, don't forget my two sons. Make them great with you. They could sit on your right and your left, give them the top jobs when you're prime minister, give them the cabinet posts so they can be with you when one of them could be vice president, they could be deputy leader." And Jesus says, actually, it is not wrong to want to be great. He doesn't blame her that she wants her sons to be great. But what he does do is he gives us a very different idea of how we become great. How can that happen? Is it by getting the top job? Is it by being a big name? Is it by telling lots of people what to do and having lots of people who work for you? Is it about how much power you get, how much credit and recognition and respect and honor? No, says Jesus. No, he says, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must become your servant. If you want to be great, start by being last, by being least. If you want to be at the top, you need to go down to the bottom. You need to be a servant. You need to be a slave. You need to be humble. You have to go down to come up. I quite like this logo. I haven't been paid by Nike to advertise for them. I'm doing this completely for free. But I think that tick symbol is a helpful one, because that's what Jesus is saying. He's saying you have to go down first in order to go up higher than you ever were before. You have to go down to come up. And that, I think, makes no sense at all to us. Sorry, we'll come back to that. It makes no sense to us until we hear what Jesus says next about it. And these are some of the most important words that Jesus ever said. They are some of the most important words that any of us here will hear. If you know nothing else about Jesus, please take these words to heart. And you will have got the heart of it. And you will have got the most important thing. Let's let these words of Jesus really sink in. I think that is well worth our time. We're going to spend a little bit of time looking just at these words of Jesus. And here they are. Jesus says, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. We go down in order to go up. We serve and become least and last, just as Jesus also did that. We're going to look at that statement Jesus made in two parts, the first part and the second part. So let's look at the first part. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. Let's think about that. You see there, Jesus calls himself the Son of Man. Now, everyone who is listening knows what he means by the Son of Man. It's a title that comes from earlier in the Bible. You might know some Bible stories. You might have heard of Daniel and the lion's den. Well, those words come from Daniel. Daniel lived through a series of dictators, ruthless tyrants, oppressors, power-hungry men who ran empires and kingdoms and abused their power. So one leader would throw some of his friends into a fire. Another leader would throw them into the lions to be fed. And Daniel has a vision, which he believes comes from God. A vision of how God will get rid of every human authority and power. Of every power-hungry leader, every oppressor. How God will free the world from all of that and replace all of that with a new eternal kingdom. In Daniel's vision, the leaders that God gets rid of, they are represented by monsters, by beasts, by animals, because that's what they are. They are less than human, just chasing after their own desires, like satisfying their urges, like animals, less than human. And then in the vision, Daniel sees coming down from heaven a Son of Man. He means a perfect person, an ideal man, an ideal human being, who's not like all these monsters and beasts that run the world. Because this Son of Man is humble. And we love him because he serves us. And he's selfless. He is human as human is meant to be. And Jesus came along and said, well, that's me. That's who I am. Jesus, fully God, divine creator of the universe, and yet humble enough to become one of us and walk in our world as a human being, the best perfect, most perfect life that was ever lived. And not only that, he came to serve us instead of to be served. One missionary tells the story of how some local people came and admired a statue of Jesus that looks a bit like that, and they look at the statue and they say, well, this Jesus must be a great leader, must be an important ruler, because he has a servant bowing at his feet to serve him. And the missionary replied, no, you don't understand. Jesus is the one bowing down on the ground, washing his followers' feet. We love Jesus because he serves and because he loves others. And that's why we've come to serve you. That's why we've come to this place as nurses and doctors, to serve you as Jesus serves us. And still today, the world is full of leaders and powerful people who abuse their power. And we all feel unsafe. We wait on the edge of our seats as North Korea and the United States plan to meet to find out if this means nuclear war or if it means peace. We see it in our world. We see it in our lives. I wonder what it's like if you are at work and you go to work. I wonder what the atmosphere is like there. Are there people who act like that, who for them it's all about them, their power, their big name, that they're self-absorbed? Businesses are wrecked by that, aren't they? By somebody in charge who just always wants to get their own way and be the big person, the important person, and everyone suffers. It's like that in marriage. It's like that in family life. Samuel Johnson knew a married couple like that. They both wanted to come first. They both wanted to be the most important. And he said, well, what a good thing they married each other, because that way they've made two people miserable instead of making four people miserable. It messes up the world. It messes up our lives. And the Son of Man comes to replace all that. God comes to get rid of dictators and tyrants, and to stop this endless war in everyday life over who is going to win and who is the most important, with everyone saying, it's me, I'm the important one. To bring an end to that. To get rid of self-absorbed human beings who make this world a terrible place to live in. To get rid of people like, shall I name names? To get rid of people like me. The biggest problem my family have, that my church will have, is to be led by somebody who wants that power and wants to be important. And I don't believe I'm the only one. Isn't it true of you as well? That you want life and you want the world to be about you and your needs? And wouldn't it be a wonderful thing for all of us to be set free from living in a world, living in a family, living in a home that suffers from that problem? Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. Let's look again then at the second half of what Jesus says there. We've looked at the first half. Let's focus on the end of that statement. To give his life as a ransom for many. How does Jesus serve us? What did he come to do that serves us and sets us free? Well, he came to die for us, to give his life for us, to pay a ransom. As he says there, he came to pay a ransom for many. Now, we still use that word ransom all the time in movies and TV programs. It always makes a great story. There's usually something like this. Someone's cut it out of newspaper. There's a demand, pay up, or else. I found a website where you can make your own ransom note. So if anyone is thinking of kidnapping someone and holding someone hostage, there's a helpful resource there. That might be a useful tip for you to use. Here's one ransom note I especially liked. We have your newspaper. Pay up or we'll cut out more letters. Ransom is the title of a movie as well. It's an old movie. You might have seen it years ago. It's Mel Gibson there, looking a bit younger. He was playing the part of a rich dad, a rich father, who loves his young son and is desperate to rescue his young son, to set the young son free from the people who have taken him. And the son can't get away. The son can't escape. The son will die unless the father pays the price, a ransom. A ransom, that is what the word means. That is why Jesus dies. Because our Father in heaven, our Creator, who loves us and longs to set us free, sees that we are trapped. Taken captive by our own selfishness, our own self-absorbed sinfulness, our addiction to being the most important person in every situation, to being the one who is great or who comes first. And we're trapped in that, and we need to be set free, because we too will die. We're headed for trouble, because at the end of our lives, at the end of our history, really there is only room for one God in this universe. And it can't be me, and it can't be you. It can only be God. But here is the amazing thing, that the Son of Man comes to wipe away all that misery, all that kind of competition for people trying to replace God. But instead of doing that, before he does any of that, before he judges or punishes or cleans the world of that, before any of that, he comes to pay the price. He says, let me be the one to die instead of you. Let me pay the price. Let me stand in for you. And so Jesus dies on a cross, put to death as a criminal, executed as a terrorist would be executed, to take our place. We rebel against God and try to replace him. It's what we deserve. And Jesus says, no, I will pay the price. I will pay the ransom. Let it be me instead of you. He gives his life. In that sentence, Jesus says to give his life as a ransom. He gave his life. It wasn't taken from him. Nobody could have done that. It is given by him. He chose this. The words that we've read are written before Jesus dies. He is approaching the time and he's approaching the place, and he knows the time and he knows the place. He knows where he will die, and yet he is walking towards it and saying, I will do this. He's explaining to his followers, I will do this for you. I'm doing this to pay the price, to pay a ransom for many. I choose this out of love to set you free. And he also tells us that after he dies, on the third day, he says, I will return to life. I will rise again to show the world that we too can have eternal life. So forgive me for making it a bit superficial, but really it's the Nike tick again, isn't it? Jesus saying, I'm going down to my death in order to come up to life, down to the cross in order to come up for the resurrection, down to Good Friday to come up for Easter Sunday. And he is saying, come with me on that journey. You see, if our mothers ever wanted us to be great, if our mothers ever felt we should be number one, well, here's how it happens. We go down before we go up. His kingdom, we say, Jesus, your kingdom is what matters, not my kingdom. Your empire, not mine. We let go of our self-importance, our self-absorbed obsessions with ourselves, our me first. And we say, let Jesus be greater. We say, I will serve him. And I will serve others for him. It won't be easy. It will be costly. It will be difficult. It does mean going down. But it lifts us up to be the people God created us to be as we should be. And it lifts us up to enjoy him and his kingdom for all eternity. So I wonder whether you will do that. I wonder whether you have done that. And if you have, whether you will still live that way. And if you never have, I wonder if today is the day to take that step. Well, it's a big question. It's an important question.